I think this is the only time you're all together for the afternoon, right? Okay. As was said, I appreciate the introduction. Were you saying I like to argue? You said, probably do I, well, no, I don't. Anyway, I know some people that do like to argue. Beware of dangerous doctrine. And I believe probably now, as much as any time in my life, this is probably as big a threat to you as anything that might be out there. I think certain other things, such as aspects of worldliness and things like that, particularly in this digital age, probably is also of equal threat and of concern as well. And really that kind of accompanies that. But I think you do need to be aware of the fact that there are a lot of things being taught now out in the world, a lot of ways for you to be influenced. And I'm not going to really talk about specific doctrines so much, maybe right at the first, in terms of the context of 1 John. But what I would like to do is really just talk about various aspects of false teachers, false doctrines, characteristics of them. And I have to make sure that the consequences of following dangerous doctrine. How do I avoid falling into dangerous doctrine? And then some things that taking a stand against dangerous doctrines will require of you. So let's get started. As was said, we're in the book of John, or we're in the epistles of John, various epistles, and he warns us, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are of God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world," and that was the case in his day, and it seems in particular that at that time there was a particular religion called Gnosticism. And what Gnosticism basically taught was that Jesus did not really come in the flesh, but he came in the spirit. And they taught that in order to be saved, you had to have some sort of special secret knowledge. Now, that sounds kind of bizarre to us, but that doctrine did gain a lot of strength during this time. And basically, they would believe that their actions did not have a big bearing on their salvation. You can imagine that might appeal to some people, right? As long as you got special knowledge, you can live any way you want. You see how dangerous that is? It's not too far away from what some people really believe today. They wouldn't say that, but a lot of people live that way. Now, I don't think you came here to hear about Gnosticism, did you? All right? You're going to go home and say, "We learned about Gnosticism, how to defeat it." Probably, that's not a big threat to you. But he was obviously combating that doctrine. I want to make a point out of that. We're not going to go look at these verses. I have a lot of charts, probably more than I need, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this subject, because I think, for the most part, most of you would not have a problem with this. But I want to illustrate this by pointing something out. He is emphatically dealing with that doctrine. Those verses that I have quoted, he is very specifically saying, Jesus came in the flesh. We saw him. We touched him. We knew him. He makes it clear that we can't live in darkness and claim fellowship with God. And that is relevant to us today, right? Now, the way he is confronting this, and a lot of different passages, and we'll show a list of some of them here in a little bit, need to alert us all to the fact that there are a lot of false doctrines in the world today. A lot. And that we have to be on guard against them. I was able to sit in a little bit of Lorenzo's talk a few minutes ago, and I think he kind of alluded to this same type of thing. A lot of people have the attitude, it doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you are sincere. The Bible does not teach such a thing. It really doesn't. I want you to consider this chart. Now, this is a hypothetical group of people. Adam, Bill, Sydney, David, Ellen. I know Sydney spelled kind of funny. I've always liked that name. If I'd had a daughter, we'd have named her Sydney, probably. If my wife would have went along with it. But you can see 9 different questions that are somewhat controversial within the religious world. Right? A lot of different people have different opinions on the, particularly right now. See if I can make this green white work. Here we go. People who engage in homosexual relations. That's a big topic today, right? Big debate about that. And you'll get all sorts of people who argue all sorts of different things on it. Women preachers. Abortion. Should infants be baptized? And you can see the others. Divorce. Get in a marriage and want to divorce someone. You're tired of the marriage. Found somebody better. It's okay, right? The Bible doesn't teach that. but people believe different things about it. I mean, even mainline denominations have taken views that would say that is okay. And they'll have it in their documents. I've read them. Go online and read them. Premarital sex. I'm just amazed. When I was your ages, I hardly knew of anyone who lived together. If they did, they didn't talk about it because they were ashamed of it. Now, people don't care. I have a very good young man in many ways. He's married now, who works under me that I supervise, that lived with his girlfriend for 2 years. And he didn't make that a secret. He eventually married her. And he had no shame about it. Because there are people who will engage in that and get up and go to church the next morning. That's the world we're living in. And it is a threat to you because if you're not careful, you can fall into the trap of accepting the arguments that people make to say that's okay. Let's keep going forward. So what I want to stress to you is that I don't believe the Bible really is teaching us that anything we want to do, anything that works for us, like was talked about in the last class in here, the Bible doesn't really teach that that's okay, right? That as long as it works for you. And people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to face what the Bible really says in many cases. That's really the case. So, now, I want you to look at this list, and we're not going to read every passage, but I want you to get the sense for some of the things the Bible says. Beware of false prophets. Watch out for those who cause divisions. There are many insubordinate, empty talkers and deceivers. In latter times, some will depart from the faith. Keep going. Fierce wolves. This is Paul talking to the Ephesian elders at Ephesus. Fierce wolves will come in after you. He even told them, I spent 3 years warning you about this. Evil people and imposters will go from bad to worse. I'm kind of painting a bad picture here, right? And it's not a real positive subject. It's not really good that we have to deal with this. But we have to be aware. It's one part of our relationship with God is being aware of these kind of things. And that's what we're trying to warn you against today. So, let's look at some consequences. 2 Timothy 4, verse 3. Now I cheated. I printed all my verses off. And I'm moving so fast, you may not be able to catch every verse, but hopefully you can be able to catch most of them or at least listen. Well, now I'm confused. Paul, how about reading that for us? Yes. Okay. The idea here is that there's a time coming when people do not want to hear sound doctrine, but instead they will go after those that teach things that appeal to them. There are certain places, certain churches that wouldn't have certain preachers because of things that they teach. They wouldn't have it because they don't want to listen to it. And that's what Paul is saying here. There are times in which that'll occur. Spiritual Paul read by this Paul, right? That's what Paul said, right? Anyway. Well, you're spiritual Paul too. Paul in the Bible was inspired to write it. You know what I'm talking about. All right, let's move on. Now I'm caught up, actually. While he was doing that, I was able to catch up. We may destroy the faith of others. Look at 2 Timothy, the second chapter. You should be pretty close there. I'm looking at verse 17. Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus. He's talking about, and he's already preceded, some of the things they talk about. Who has swerved from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already happened. They're upsetting the faith of some. You may destroy the faith of others. You may be deceived into regularly falling into some teaching, one belief after another. I know people like that. I'm thinking of a young lady right now who used to come here and now she went into another religion. And I think that's kind of been her habit, or it seems to be. And I wouldn't be surprised if she goes to another one. Because it's being tossed to and fro, as Ephesians 4 and verse 14 says, no longer be children, but tossed to and fro by the way, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves carried about on every wind of doctrine. You ever gone down and got in the ocean and maybe a float, and here comes a wave, and that comes a wave, and it knocks you all over the place. That's the kind of idea that people are. That's the kind of idea that's being expressed here, being tossed to and fro, back and forth. It could cause our worship to be in vain. Jesus said in Matthew, the 15th chapter, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men." That was the words of Jesus. I think he was speaking to the Jews there. They seem to have a sense of godliness. Their lips said that they were following God, but their hearts weren't there. And that's something we have to guard against. We can lose our souls. 2 John, the 8th chapter. Watch your... 2 John, the 8th verse. There's only one... there's no chapter divisions in 2 John. It's only a... 2 John 8. Watch yourselves so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter. I know I'm hitting you with a lot of verses, but I think it's important to do that. Verse 16, or the second part of verse 16. There are some things in them that are hard to understand, which the ignorant and unstable twist to their own destruction, as they do the other scriptures. So they're twisting it to their own destruction. What are some characteristics of false teachers? When you think of a false teacher, what do you think of? Horns coming out of the head and pitchfork and... I don't know, some of the pictures I see, the devil even has a tail, right? Like a dragon. That's the idea that we sometimes have, but that's really not the idea the Bible paints. Or the picture the Bible paints. Look at the words of Jesus in Matthew 7. Beware of false prophets. This is verse 15. Who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 14. Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Now, I got to looking at that. I did a lot of research. I say a lot of research. Some research. I want to read you a little bit from an article that I found. This was written about a preacher in memorial of him. This man died in the 70s. Very faithful gospel preacher. And it spoke of a time in his life in which a lot of people were accepting a doctrine known as premillennialism in churches of Christ. And there was a great effort to meet and to defeat that doctrine because it was believed, and I believe, that it's a false doctrine. Well, this man's father was reluctant to get involved in dealing with that doctrine because he had some people that he thought a lot of that were teaching it. And I want you to read, I'm going to read for you what it says. And I'm not going to name names here, but it says, he never became an ardent proponent of premillennial propaganda, but warmly admired, and it's got the people, some of the people who taught it, among brethren, and warmly defended another group that taught it, another family that taught it. And this is the way he viewed them. The millennialists were so sweet-spirited and Christ-like. Their opponents were so harsh and unkind. Now, the point I'm making here is, we should all be sweet and we should all be sweet-spirited and Christ-like. That's obvious. But merely being that way does not mean the doctrine that you teach is necessarily right. You see my point? And this man was kind of being swayed by that. He didn't want to oppose his friends because he was close to them. And it went on, and there's more to say that we could say about that. The people that were actually teaching that doctrine went a little further into error and even endorsed a well-known traveling preacher that's been on television. He's very aged now, but who was very, very well-known in this country at one time. And the people who were endorsing that false doctrine of premillennialism were actually proponents and actually wrote things that suggested that this national preacher was doing a good work. What if his friends had stood up and said, you know, you really shouldn't be teaching that doctrine, instead of letting his relationship with him affect that? See my point? Anyway, let's keep going. The Bible shows that they may be good. They may seem very good to us. They may have a considerable following. 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter. And I know some of these verses will hit more than one time. You'll probably see this one several times. Verse 2, many will follow their sensuality. Verse 1 says, false prophets also rose among the people. and there'll be false teachers among you. And it says, this is Peter writing this in verse 2, many will follow their sensuality. Many will follow it. It may sound good and flatter us. Romans the 16th chapter, this is the Apostle Paul writing now. And he mentions some things about them causing divisions, creating obstacles, things like that. For such persons do not serve our Lord Christ. I'm using the English Standard Version. And by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive. We'll use that, we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well. So they may sound good and actually use flattery. We'll have an example of that later. They may appeal to human wisdom and philosophy. Colossians 2 warns us about that. See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. I was looking at a website earlier, and it was a well-known denomination, and it explained why they, basically it says, well, why do you have women preachers when the Apostle Paul's writings makes it clear that that should not be allowed. That should not be done. This is not God's will. And they had this explanation. It was crafted so wonderfully. Well, we use human experience and reason, and I wished I thought about printing it off and bringing it here. I just really don't have time to go over everything I'd like to talk about. But it was crafted so, and I don't know the word I'm looking for. It was crafted in such a way that you would have a hard time arguing with it if you didn't know better. It sounded good. And it appealed to human philosophy, human wisdom, not godly wisdom. And I think that's something you have to be careful about. Because there are people out there who are very good and very skilled in how they present things and how they craft things. And it'll make it almost sound like you're just a terrible person for disagreeing with them. So be aware of that. Characteristics of false teachers. They may quietly and privately teach their beliefs. 2 Peter 2 and verse 1, I think we've seen this already. Beware of the false prophets who secretly bring in destructive heresies. A lot of times people who begin teaching error sometimes will do that very quietly and very small groups at first and not involve the entire congregation. I heard of a situation that was happening at a congregation not too far from here where a group started meeting and one of the elders tried to investigate and then was basically told to we don't want you in here. And that was at that congregation, right? Well, the elder had the absolute right to see what was going on there. And they were kind of getting off on some things. I don't know whatever happened with that. But secretly, sometimes privately, people will start pushing their views. You have to be careful about that. They may take advantage of simple-minded people. Now, that doesn't sound too nice, does it? But let's look at what some of the passages say. Sometimes people are simple-minded because they choose to be that way. Romans, the 16th chapter. This is one we hit over and over. Look at what it says there at the very end. Deceive the hearts of the naive. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 6. I know it's hard for you to keep up. It talks about certain women. These false teachers creep into households. Again, that's sort of that stealth kind of way there, similar to what we just talked about. They capture weak women, burdened by sins and led astray by various passions. People who are weak. 2 Peter, the second chapter. Look at verse 14. They entice unsteady souls. Again, they take advantage of people who maybe are not trained, maybe have not disciplined themselves, maybe are not knowledgeable enough to be aware of false teaching when it's there. And I think we sort of said this already, but look again at 2 Timothy, the third chapter. They have a sense of godliness about them. Verse 5, 2 Timothy 3, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. Avoid such people. They may twist Scripture and make arguments by twisting them. Now we've already noticed the passage that deals with Peter in verse 2 Peter 3 where he's speaking of Paul's writings. Some were hard to understand. Some are hard to understand today, right? And sometimes people can take those and twist them into arguments that were really never intended and don't harmonize with the other passages or other scriptures. The devil did that with Jesus. Turn over to Matthew, the fourth chapter. Now, this is the temptation of Jesus, right? And Jesus had been fasting 40 days and 40 nights. And he has also already tried to get Jesus to turn rocks into stone. And Jesus has answered that. And the devil comes and takes him to the pinnacle of the temple and says to him, if you're the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you. On their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. He was trying to use those passages to get Jesus to comply with him. Jesus answered it because he was taking those out of context and trying to get him to follow him. Their fruits and their works will reveal them. A lot of times people who take views that are not in keeping with sound doctrine, it will be shown in their personal lives in some way. It will be shown. And sometimes you can see that evident. As time goes on, as more things happen, you will see that evident. I think this is worth saying. Now, a lot of times a false teacher will take the most liberal view on a matter and try to push the limits. Right? Sometimes, and a lot of times that's the case. That is not always the case. Be aware of this. They don't always take the most liberal view because the Jewish sect known as the Pharisees, remember them? They were known as the pious ones. I think Jewish society looked at them and they saw them and well, they thought, there's somebody that's holy. Well, they really weren't in many ways. They had established rules that were well-intentioned, I think, in many cases. Were rules that helped them be careful in carrying out God's commands, right? But what happened was the rules became laws in their minds. And if you violated one of their traditions, you were practically sinning. They even called Jesus in about it, and said, you know, why do your disciples not wash their hands like the tradition of the elders? And this was not something that was required of in the Bible, in the Old Testament, but they had made it a law. Be careful, all of us. We need to be careful that we don't make laws where God hasn't. That's something I've had to look at in my own life before, to be very careful about that kind of thing. I still have to look at it. And I think any of us do. The Pharisees focused on the small details. When Jesus talked about that, and this goes to back to a time when they tithed these little herbs that they grew. They were very careful that they gave a tenth, which was required of the law. And Jesus said that you should have done that. But don't leave the other left undone. Faith, justice, and mercy. Be careful that you don't center in on the small things and leave the weightier matters undone. That can happen to us. It can happen to any of us very easily. I'm not giving you a lot of time to talk. So how do you avoid it? Let me ask you a question. How many of you still live at home? Most hands went up. I know you got a few married folks here, but most hands went up. How long do you go without hearing your parents talk to you? An hour? Two? Three? I mean, when you're at home, do you just not talk to your parents or don't your parents not talk to you? I'm seeing some smiles out there. Why is that? You might not want to hear them sometimes, right? You talk to your parents every day, don't you? They talk to you every day. Then why is it you go days without listening to God? God talks to you through His Word. And if the only time you pick your Bible up is when you get ready to go to service, it's 10 minutes before service starts. You bring it to church and you take it back and it sits there until next time. Then how are you growing? I know people do that because I've had times in my life when I did it. So think about that. One way to avoid false doctrine is to know what God says. In fact, that is the way to avoid false doctrine. Know what God says. 2 Timothy, the second chapter. Now, the English Standard Version puts it this way. I kind of like the old King James when it comes to this verse, but I'll read what I have. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. What do some of your other versions say for that in that first little phrase there? Something y'all love to do. Study. Somebody loves to study. Huh? Be diligent. I don't like to study secular books. I am so glad to be out of college. 30 years, or it hadn't been 30, but a number of years later, I'm glad to be out of college. I don't like to study college stuff. But when you immerse yourself in the Word of God, it can become a likable thing because it is God talking to you. You do it on a regular basis and realize it is the Spirit, it is the greatest being that you can ever imagine, with more power than you've ever dreamed of. Then it becomes an enjoyable thing. And it should. 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter. All Scripture is breathed out by God. The word inspired, and I think some versions say is given by inspiration, right? Is breathed out by God as if God breathed in, breathed out into the prophets or to the writers' lungs. He didn't literally do that, but that's kind of the allegory that's being used here. And it gives you the idea that it is God putting this inside the writer. And that's what it's talking about. It is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped for every good work. Spend time studying, and you'll have much less problems with false doctrines. Compare what is said to what is in the Bible. 1 John kind of deals with that. He gives kind of a formula here for understanding, I believe in that time, probably in the context of understanding these Gnostic teachers who were teaching that Jesus didn't come in the flesh. He says, by this you'll know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus is Christ, that Christ has come in the flesh, is from God. You know, they may have been teaching a lot of other good things, but if they weren't going to acknowledge that Jesus really came, then they were false prophets, right? And we were able to see that. They're able to see that from what had been revealed already. 2 Thessalonians, the 5th chapter. But test everything, hold fast that which is good. The church at Ephesus in the book of Revelation, chapter 2, Jesus says to them, I know your works, your toil, your patient endurance, and you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not. The example in Galatians is dealing with the time, I think we may have to hit that one already, if not, we'll hit it again. Basically, he's saying, if an angel from heaven, I know it was on our earlier chart, should preach to you a gospel contrary to the one we preach to you, let him be accursed. And he says it twice, for emphasis. There's a major religion in this country, really worldwide now, that bases its entire belief system on the fact, claim that an angel appeared to a man and gave him a new revelation. Even if that were true, it wouldn't be right, because this is what Paul says right here. Right? Be careful to avoid the influence of false teachers. I know we've already hit Romans, the 16th chapter. The word there is being used, avoid them. I'll tell you, it seems like, and this has been this way a long time, I think some people want to come up with something new. Some new way of looking at things. Some new aspect that we've never considered before. And there's a sense of pride, I think, associated with that. I want to tell you, I think this right here is something that's a growing concern. Be careful. I know there's lots of writers out there, and there are some very talented people. But be careful with using that very much. I see people put notes on Facebook, read this book by such and such. I looked at one time that somebody had promoted. This was a Christian. They had put that on Facebook. And I Googled the author. The author believed in evolution. He believed in evolution, theistic evolution. Be careful with these secular writers, because some of them are very skilled in the way they write. Max Lucado is very well known in many circles. I know he probably has some, he has a terrific talent. If you read anything of his, you can see and appreciate the talent that he has. But what he does, I heard an elder one time just really proclaiming how great this was. This was years ago, 20-something years ago. An elder that I know was talking about how you just got to get this book. You got to get this book. And I remember looking at that book, and what the author had done, he had taken the inspired account and he had inserted additional characters as if you were there. I didn't think that was good. Now, it may have moved a lot of people, but I don't think it was any better than the actual account. I think there's a danger of being involved too much and drinking too much from this, in a sense. And a lot of people are doing it, and a lot of people are being led astray. I know one man right now that used to be here that has gone into apostasy, I believe. And I think some of it had to do with some of the things he's reading. Again, some people are very skilled in the way they write, just like we talked 2 minutes ago. And they can write things so beautifully, wonderfully, it almost sounds like it's just almost impossible to disagree with. Be careful of those kinds of things. Don't spend more time reading that. I'm not saying you should never read a book written by someone else. Please don't think that. But just be careful with it. Anyway, I probably spend enough time on that, right? Don't endorse or provide encouragement or lend support to them. Second John, I got caught again. First chapter, only chapter, Second John. Now, in this particular context, dealing with this particular problem that was going on, he says in verse 10, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, and again, this is the teaching of Christ, don't receive him into your house or give him any greeting. Whoever greets him takes part in his wicked work. So in dealing with that situation, that was pretty extreme, wasn't it? I think that illustrates God's attitude towards those who teach error. Alright? Now, we do see some other times when people were involved in error that, like, I think we'll have an example later that we'll show how it was dealt with. Romans, the 16th chapter, we've hit that again. Avoid them. Avoid them. Ephesians 5 and verse 6. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Don't become partakers with them. Right? Verse 11, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. I think we all need to be careful about this, myself included. I see a lot of things promoted on Facebook and social media, a lot of doctrines, a lot of things. I've seen pictures of those people involved in things that really shouldn't be. So it seemed like it was someone that I knew of. A few weeks ago, it looked like he was in sort of a party situation. And I can't remember for certain on that situation, but I think some might have liked it. But I've seen other things where people have promoted certain things and given their endorsement to certain things that I don't think is in accordance with sound doctrine. And Christians have liked it. People in various states of immodest dress, things like that. I saw something a few weeks ago. A lot of people had liked, many, many people that I knew had liked a picture of someone very immodest. Very, very immodest, in my opinion. And when you do that, you're kind of giving your endorsement to it, aren't you? I mean, how are you going to teach them that you shouldn't do that when you're liking it? You see my point? And I think it would also include participating in unscriptural activities. I have to deal with this somewhere I work. We have a lot of retirement parties, going away parties, things like that. And I want to be careful how I say this, but we're here, this congregation, we're very careful about how we use the funds and what we do with our building because we want to be a church like we read about in the Bible. We want to be careful. And if there's an indication in the Bible that we ought to be able to be doing something here, we want to do it. If it isn't, we want to avoid it. We don't use our building for recreational activities because there's nothing in the Bible that indicates that churches should do that. The situation I get faced with is that there's a church in Huntsville that somebody has a connection to where I work, and they seem to have a lot of parties there, going away parties, things that would be good to go to. And, you know, I just had someone recently leave and go on to another position in another state, somebody that I work with pretty close. And they had it at a church in Huntsville. I didn't feel comfortable going to that, and I didn't go. And I'm not saying that to brag. I would have liked to have gone. But how can I say You know, you really shouldn't do that with your funds and then go over there and participate with it. You see that? I think by doing that, we endorse, we give encouragement to that kind of thing. Anyway, think about that. Make sure you teach and follow sound doctrine. I want you to turn over. I don't have it on my chart. I should have put it on there. Turn over to 1 Timothy, the first chapter. In verse 10. And while you're turning there, I want to ask you a question. When you think of sound doctrine, what do you think of? Nothing? What do you think of? Doctrine has a strong foundation. What kind of subjects do you think about? I didn't word my question very well. You want me to help you? Is it just 2:30? You've seen 100 PowerPoints. It's death by PowerPoint, right? That's what we call it at work. And I think that's a national term. We didn't invent that term. How to establish Bible authority. What is wrong with premillennialism? Is that what you think of? Okay. That's probably right. How to establish that baptism is essential for salvation. Think about things like that. That's doctrine. And I think that would fit. What do you not think about? That's kind of a dumb way to put it. What do you not think about? Do you think of moral issues when you think of sound doctrine? Worldliness? I want you to look at this passage here. Look at verse 9. And it talks about what the law is made for. I'm not going to read the entire list, but it gives a list of sins. The lawless, disobedient, ungodly, for sinners, for unholy, for profane. I think this is actually the King James. Those who strike their fathers and mothers, murderers, sexually immoral, homosexuals, kidnappers, liars. Now the point there is that that's written for people to try to bring them out of that. Right? Don't ever forget that. And I know we've talked about in times past, don't limit your subject and think nobody could be saved if they're engaged in that kind of thing. They can be saved. The point I want to make here, I want you to notice what it says at the very end, I believe of verse 10. I copied it, I wrote it down so I didn't get it exact. If there is anything else that's contrary to sound doctrine. So you see the point that I'm making here? What he's saying is those things aren't in accordance with sound doctrine. He lists moral things. So the point I'm trying to make is, it's not just these sophisticated doctrinal things that we have to think about. Yes, those things are a part of it, but it's also just things that deal with worldliness and morality. That's part of sound doctrine. But worldliness is part of, not part of sound doctrine, but not being worldly. Y'all didn't catch that, did you? Titus 2 in verse 1, but as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. 2 Timothy, the first chapter. Follow the pattern of sound words that you have heard from me. In the faith and love that are in Christ Jesus. The time is coming, this is 2 Timothy 4, when people will not endure sound teaching. Again, we talked about that earlier. People will have itching ears. Basically, that's an analogy of somebody's got to scratch that itch. Does God give a specific answer to every question that comes up? No, of course not. Is there a passage that says it is wrong to shoot heroin? No. Are there plenty of principles here to know that it's wrong to shoot heroin? Yes. God gives us enough. He gives us what is sufficient for us to form principles, to make judgments, because we can see those principles in the Scripture. That's how we form sound doctrine. That's how we know we're safe. So God's not going to give you He hasn't revealed a question to everything, but He has given everything that is sufficient for us to live and make decisions and know what is right and wrong. And that's the point I want to make. You know, I ought to be like this. That way I would look at you over there and, right? Is that better? Didn't feel right. I'm just going to look over there. Make sure you're awake. I don't see anybody sleeping much. As soon as I said that, I saw somebody. I'm not judging you about that. I know it's been long. And it's been a long day. So I'm sure that's happened to me too. It wasn't anybody over there. You're laughing like it was you, but it wasn't. I don't think a thing about it. I really don't. If I did, I'd be a hypocrite. Don't compromise. Look at Galatians 2. Now this situation is one when Peter came to Antioch, he was opposed by Paul because what had happened was, you know, remember this history of Jews and Gentiles, the way Jews viewed Gentiles, they didn't eat with them, they didn't associate with them. Well, now Jews are becoming Christians. It's a good thing, and that's what God intended. That's the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham, remember? And he says, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Because what had happened was, he had been eating with Gentiles, but when certain men came from James, he was, before they came, he was eating with the Gentiles, but when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the Jews. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with him. Barnabas was known as an encourager, son of encouragement. It's kind of his nickname. I think that's even what Barnabas meant. He was caught up in it. He kind of compromised what he knew was better. And basically, he was stood up to by Paul because of his hypocrisy. Don't compromise. You're not going to win anybody over by compromising with them. Right? And sometimes in the dealings with people, we're caught in a situation where sometimes we're kind of tempted to do that. So Paul confronted that. Again, don't expect to lead someone out without compromising. Be careful in your personal relationships. I'm not saying you shouldn't have friends who are not Christians. That is not my point. But I think you need to be careful. Do you know what that passage says without looking at it? Be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Don't be fooled into thinking that's not true. It is true. Be honest with yourselves. You know that it is true. Many people have allowed friendships, romantic relationships, to alter their views. And as a result, they're no longer adhering to sound doctrine. This is one I really want you to notice. Turn over to this 1 Kings, the 11th chapter. Who is the wisest man who ever lived that we know about? Solomon. How did he get that wisdom? Yeah, God gave it to him. God appeared to him in a dream and asked for whatever you want, basically. He didn't ask for a new car or anything like that. He asked for, well, he wouldn't ask for a car, but he didn't ask for a lot of riches or a big shiny gold throne or anything like that. He got that. What did he ask for? Wisdom. You know, the New Testament tells us if we ask for wisdom today, God gives it to us abundantly. I didn't mean to make that point, but I just thought of that as I was saying that. You see how God lavished wisdom on Solomon. So keep that point in mind. Now, verse 1 of chapter 11 of 1 Kings. Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh. I believe she's already been introduced in a prior chapter. Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women. He had 700 wives who were princesses, 300 concubines. Look what happened. Some of the saddest words in the Bible. His wives turned away his heart. For when he was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. He went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. He built a high place, verse 7, for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem that became known as the Mount of Offense as a result. He did this for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrificed to their gods. There is no passage in the Bible that indicates, that says, Solomon came back. The wisest man who ever lived with direct wisdom from God fell prey to idolatry. And I want you to notice this little six-word sentence at the end of verse 2. You know why? Solomon clung to these in love. I'm sure many of these were political arrangements, but he fell for them. I want to warn you, in your dating relationships, choose people who are sound and grounded in truth. You will not regret that. Don't think you can change somebody. Sometimes they will change. And I've seen that happen. I know about that personally. But I'm going to tell you, I've seen many, many people fall prey. I'm going to give you a personal example. My time's going to run short, but I really want to tell you this. I grew up going to the same congregation almost my entire childhood, with the exception of either a few months or a year right when I was first born. My parents still go to that congregation. So as is the case with many of you, as you probably might expect, you are going to get to know the people that you go to church with, right? And you learn these people. You grow up with them. And there was a group of us there, and most everyone became Christians as far as I know. Maybe one or two, maybe not did, but for the most part, everyone did. And I'm thinking of a girl who was the same age as me. In fact, she'll turn 50. I turned 50 last week. She'll turn 50 in a couple of months. I only learned that because I looked her up on Facebook. And I'll tell you why I did that here in just a minute. She got to dating a guy who was not a Christian. And this was a sweet girl, good girl in many ways, as far as I ever knew about it. I didn't know everything that she did, but I had no reason to think she was anything terrible, anything like that. She got to dating a guy who's not a Christian, and she dated and continued to date him, and they fell in love. She fell in love with him. And they got married. And for a while, my memory is sketchy. This was about the time that I went to school at Auburn. I didn't go immediately to Auburn when I got out of college. I went to Calhoun at first, and then I went to Auburn. So it was a couple of years there. My recollection is that for a while she came to church, continued to come to church with us. For a while. But eventually she kept coming. That's my recollection. Stopped coming. Well, I lost track of her. Occasionally through the years, I would think about her. And I never had any kind of relationship with her other than just friends. But I would think about her sometimes. Wonder what happened to her. So I looked her up on Facebook recently because I thought of her in this context. She, like me, has... Well, my children aren't grown, but she has two grown children. She's a grandmother now. Seems like she's a good grandmother based on the post that she has on there. I would imagine her to be a good, seems like she loves her family. She's no longer married to the guy she married back way back. In fact, she's been married again and divorced again. Now she's dating some other guy. I looked up her children, too. Again, not to be a creeper. I wouldn't know her daughter if she came to the door. But I clicked on her profiles, too. I didn't learn a whole lot about the son. But I learned something about the daughter. The daughter had her occupation listed, and her daughter was a bartender. I'm not here to look down on people. Okay, that's not my point. My point is to warn you, be careful about the relationships you form, particularly your romantic relationships, particularly the closest people that you get to. May not necessarily be romantic. But if you know there are people who are not sound in truth, grounded in truth, you need to be very careful about the relationships you form because they will have an impact on you. If somebody could have gone to her, and I'm running out of time rapidly, somebody had gone to her 30 years ago and said, Dina, 30 years from now, you're going to have been divorced twice. Your children aren't going to be faithful. Your grandchildren aren't going to be raised in an environment where they'll be faithful. Is this really what you want? Do you think she would have married that guy? Do you think she'd have gone out with him the first time? Now, I know we're talking about dangerous doctrine, but her doctrine changed. She used to have never gone on. And I could cite example after example after example like that. Be careful about your personal relationships. I really think you're vulnerable when you go off from college. Well, college, and you're seeing different people in different places. I saw it in my own life. Go off to Auburn, and there's Christians there, and they're Christians just like you, but they're not as convicted on some things. And they have their impact. And I've got a couple. I'm going to skip without going to some of those passages there, but I think you're particularly vulnerable when you get away from home. People who have similar backgrounds as you can have the various influence on you if you're not careful, if they're not convicted. Again, I'm not saying never have a friend and avoid people, but be careful. It's going to require courage and boldness. Joshua and Caleb certainly had that. I think most of you know that story. They stood up against the 10 spies who were saying, we can't take this land, stood up against the people. The Peter and the apostles, they didn't yield. They didn't yield. When they were told, stop preaching about Jesus. They said, we must obey God rather than men. You must be willing to sever close ties if necessary. Jesus said, I came to set a man at variance against his father. And he mentioned several relationships there that you may have to sever. Hopefully you won't, but it's possible that you might. You must have knowledge of the truth. Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Colossians 1 and verse 10. I want to make a quick point about that. And the point that he makes I want you to notice one thing in particular. Increasing in the knowledge of God, it says in verse 10 of chapter 1 of Colossians. Increasing your knowledge. Are you increasing? You must have gentleness. Wasn't Ananias and Sapphira, was it? It was Aquila and Priscilla. Aquila and Priscilla. I always get those mixed up. Aquila and Priscilla took Apollos aside because Apollos did not have a complete knowledge of the truth. And they just took him aside and explained to him, here's about Jesus. And then he became a very powerful preacher. Galatians demands that we use gentleness, with gentleness. And I'm rushing a little bit now. You gotta be willing to suffer persecution. Your speech, sound speech that cannot be condemned. You'd be willing to be labeled as a troublemaker. Ahab referred to Elijah, is that you, you troubler of Israel? Well, he was the troubler of Israel, but you may be labeled that way sometimes. You must have love. If you're out to win an argument, you're going about it the wrong way. I have been guilty. I think about it in college, debating something with a girl I knew in college. And I was just arrogant and rude and ugly. I wished I could undo that. Why anybody would listen to what I tried, just the way I acted. And again, we were having a religious discussion, and what I said was ugly. I wished I could undo that. She's not a Christian today, and I didn't help her. You gotta be willing to be different. God, as we're to be a peculiar people, And you may have to publicly identify false teachers. It may require that you do that. So we're at the end. I'm not going to read every one, but basically, beware of false teaching. Study so you won't fall into it. Be careful about your relationships. Any questions? All right. Thank you.